Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole deck with galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Mid-Atlantic Outdoorsman Podcast. Today is October 15th as I'm recording this intro. And in today's episode, Mike and I have Ryan Glitzky on the show. Ryan was a recommendation from the great and powerful Greg Litzinger, who we've had on the podcast a couple of times and talked October hunting whitetails. I reached out to Greg and I asked him, who would be a good guest to talk hunting the rut, to talk rut hunting tactics? And he sent me Ryan Gletsky's information and said, you absolutely need to reach out to this guy. So reached out to Ryan, did some research on Ryan. Turns out he's an absolute killer and just a really down-to-earth guy. So got to talking with Ryan. He said he was down to hop on for a show. Took one look at his taxidermy room, and it was no question at all. Ryan is an absolute serial killer of big whitetails during the rut. So in this episode, we focus on rut hunting tactics. We talk about doing some in-season scouting, identifying bedding areas, identifying intersecting trails, identifying funnels both in hill country, farm country, and several different types of habitats and terrain. Ryan's hunted a little bit of all over the place. He's hunted a bunch of states and killed some awesome deer in all of them. And yeah, that's basically the premise of this episode. So without further ado, me, myself, Ryan, Michael, we're all just going to hop right into it and start talking rut hunting. I hope you guys enjoy. Hope you guys have a great week. Hope your season is going phenomenal, and I hope you're fired up. Stay tuned. Thanks for joining. See y'all next week. Mike, Ryan, how y'all doing?
Good.
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I wish I was hunting, but I'm happy to be here talking about hunting at least.
Yeah, at least that.
Yeah, man. It's October 15th, which is kind of crazy to say out loud that it's like 16 days from November, you know.
All right, it's crazy, man. Halloween's going to be here, you know, in November, sweet November. What sucks is we wait all year, then this anticipation's here, and it's going to be gone. Snow's going to be flying, you know.
Yeah. It happens so fast, man. Yep. It happens so fast every year. It's like, you know, when you build up your entire year anticipating a two-week period, kind of setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
Because this certainly buzzes right by, but I'm super pumped. October 30th will mark the start of my rutcation. I'm taking off about 30 days, so
nice.
Super pumped.
Yeah, that's what I said. The next Friday, the 24th, my last day of work, and I'll be off in 4 weeks.
That's awesome, man. Golly, that's just great. Are you hunting? Actually, I'll tell you what. Before we get into specific questions, if you don't mind, for my listeners, can you just introduce yourself, where you're from, how you got into hunting, and tell a little bit about yourself?
Ryan Gliski from Southwest Pennsylvania. I started hunting when I was 14. My dad took me out like everybody, you know, gun hunted a couple years. I was 16 when I picked my first bow up and, you know, never looked back. And every year I say I'm not going to get more serious. For some reason, I get more serious. you know, we can get caught up in a lot of this social media stuff and that. I try not to. I've gotten down that rabbit hole before, so I've kind of come out of that rabbit hole and realized that, you know, my friends, my families, I do this for myself. And it's kind of brought the passion back into me this year, to be honest with you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah, I can totally relate to that. It's very interesting how in today's day and age in 2025, you can allow all of these exterior influences like social media, podcasts, for example, all this other stuff, man, in the hunting industry to influence like what you're willing to shoot or like how you want to hunt or what kind of gear you want to use and all that stuff, man. And at the end of the day, like, I mean, if you look back at 14-year-old Ryan walking in the woods with his dad, he probably wasn't thinking about any of that stuff.
No,
you know,
no. I was just hoping for an opportunity. I was hoping to see one, let alone shoot one at that age. Yeah. You know, so I've like I said, I've taken a step back probably last year, pretty much this year. I'm really big on woodsmanship. There's a lot of technology out there now. I'm starting to take a step back. Like I don't run any more sales, which I have nothing against anybody who does whatever. You hunt your own hunt, use what methods are legal. But like, I'm starting to take a step back. A lot of the technology. No cell cams this year. Probably next year, I'm not going to run any cameras at all. Just straight up scout woodsmanship. You know, I'm just kind of getting back to old school ways, and it's really fueling my fire, to be honest with you, this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to mention, too, there's like a surprise, almost like an anticipation aspect that comes with that. Like if you go in and you just scout, right? Like, say you find a scrape line or like a rub line or whatever, and at the end of it, there's a really big rub with a good size track or whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
And you throw a hanging hunt at it, let's say on public land, like, you have no idea, you know, could be there, could not.
Yeah.
But if you have a cell camera almost goes, or a trail camera of any kind for that matter, kind of goes both ways in the way that if I have a trail camera in an area and I don't have a picture of what I would consider a shooter buck, I don't want to go in there
at
all.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Starts to mess with your head. Yep.
Right. And there could be, like, actually, matter of fact, I was at the taxidermist the other day dropping off a Sika stag that I just recently harvested. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy there. He had a great buck, awesome whitetail buck, and that he was dropping off at the taxidermist. And I got to talking to the guy, and he had mentioned that he had 3 cell cams in the area that he killed this deer, and he's had them in there since August, and he never once had a picture of this deer.
It doesn't surprise me. Yeah. You know, after running for a few years, it's like they just, like I said, if guys run them, great. But for me personally, like they start to influence you. Like you have for this plan of attack. Like I know, like we get into, you know, the rut here or whatever, even this time of year, doesn't matter when, you're kind of waiting for that pitcher to go into a spot. Well, then you get the pitcher. Well, now you're late. You know, or, you know, and the rut rolls in, you're like, you're planning on hunting this spot tomorrow. You got, you know, it's in your head. This is where I need to be. Then you get a picture at 2 a.m. Then you're like, well, now what do I do? Do I go over there and hunt that ridge system or do I go to that creek bottom? To me, it just influenced my decision too much. Right. I'm just like, I'm going back to scouting because I'm really big on my postseason scouting. And along with my in-season scouting, I feel like I'll be in the right places now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ryan, what states do you primarily hunt?
Primarily Pennsylvania. I've been through the Midwest, Iowa, Illinois, Ohio, Wisconsin. I've hunted them. But last year I started hunting Maryland early season. I really enjoy going down there, starting season early in September. PA is my baby. Somebody always asks me, they think I'm crazy. I'd rather kill a 120, 25 inch 8-point here than kill a 150, 160 in Iowa. Because I know the challenge here in the mountains, it just means so much more to me killing a whitetail like that in these areas of public, the pressure, all that. And this is where I put all the work in. I may venture to New York a little bit too, like their gun season when it opens up a little earlier than ours here in Pennsylvania. So I may venture up this year. Just depends how PA, you know, bow season plays out here if I have time. But right now I'm pretty much focused on PA, Maryland, possibly New York. And then Ohio is always there, of course, too, across the border.
I was going to ask you that. Right on. You said southwest Pennsylvania central. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Western side of Pennsylvania. When you mentioned that, I was like, man, Ohio's right. You're next door to you. I mean, how far are you from Ohio?
Maybe like 2 hours, hour and 45 minutes. Like, it's crazy because guys, like, I've only hunted there a couple times. First time I was down there, killed a real nice 9-point. And then, like, I didn't go back for a couple years, went back down, did a little bow hunting. I've only been down there maybe like 4 times in the last 20 years. It's right there. Just, I'm always so focused on PA, or maybe I have a trip to Iowa or something like that. And just anymore, it just, when I get my time off, I want to be in PA, and it's a challenge here to kill one of the bow in the mountains. Mm-hmm. So it usually sucks all my vacation up.
For sure.
I get one down.
Yep. Hey, so the reason I had you on specifically was I got a reference from the great and powerful Greg Litzinger, and he says you are an awesome guest to talk rut hunting tactics. So that's kind of going to be the focus of today's episode. We're going to talk tactics hunting during the rut and what I would say most hunters would consider the quote-unquote peak rut, right?
Yeah.
And like for that, for us, isn't necessarily – it's kind of interesting, I always think, to talk about. It's not necessarily – what is the peak breeding activity for whitetail deer? More or less, what is the time of year that whitetail deer show us the most activity as hunters, right? Yeah. So like seeking and chasing phase, whatever you want to call it, there's a bunch of fancy terms within the industry. So I guess my first question for you would be, what if you could only hunt, let's say, 14 days during the whitetail rut, what would those 14 days be?
If you would ask me this question probably a year or two ago, I may have given you a different answer. I've always been really successful on that 7th, 8th, 9th in around there. You know, you could bookmark that area. But anymore, if you give me the weather that last part of October into the first part of November, if I get the weather, that's probably the time I prefer to be in a tree kill. Because the bucks are just starting to really feel their oats. Starting to move out of them bedding areas a little earlier, starting to hit them scrapes a little harder, starting to look a little bit. And I think they're really vulnerable before they really start breaking off and chasing. I think that's where maybe cameras come into play. You're scouting where you cut a big track or you got one on camera. I think that's when they're really killable before it really, really heats up. So you start getting into the more heat of the rut, where, because like that last week of October, I'm not a bed hunter, but I love bedding areas in thick cover. But man, them scrapes right off of that thick cover, you know, there's a buck or two in, man, can be deadly. You throw in some terrain, you know, some habitat diversity, a funnel in and around those areas, it can be deadly. And then as we transfer in November, when they start cruising a little bit harder, then your funnels start playing in a little bit more. But man, you're going to ask me, it's going to be that last part of October, first few days of November. I really like that time frame, but it seems to be really weather dependent for me personally in the mountains. When it gets real warm, you get them 70 degree days. Not saying they're not killable, but it just slows that action down a lot.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that, being from Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
The October to like maybe the 4th of November, that window right there is just.
Yeah, because what I noticed, a lot of the bigger ones will start locking down first. You know, the mature bucks, sure. It seems they know what's those. I mean, if you know where them does are going to come pop early too, late October in the first part, that's deadly in around those bedding areas if you can figure that out. But as you progress, it seems like sometimes I always tell guys, like, I do real good to like the first, second, then I get a couple of days, it's like, well, it's November 4th, 5th, and I've killed bucks in days, but like you'll get this little lull in there, like, oh, yeah. What's going on? You'll see a lot of two-year-olds, maybe occasional three-year-old, but it's like, okay. And then as you get through a couple more days, and like I love the 7th, 8th, 9th, but then it kind of picks back up a little bit for me, you know?
Right, yeah, for sure.
You mentioned hunting scrape lines on the external borders of bedding areas. Is that something that you'll actually implement during what we would consider the peak rut time frame, or is that just going to – okay.
Yeah, I've actually changed, like, over to hunting the mountains. I don't know how many years I've been there. I've been living in this house now for, like, 8 years, so I've been in the mountains for about 8 years. I did a little bit of mountain hunting back in my early years. Then I went more transition to more farm country, hill country. I was pretty successful in the rut. And as I transfer to the mountains, everything's still more vast. There's more room to roam. It's like you're trying to find that. You're trying to eliminate 90% in the mountains. Right. You're trying to find that 10%. And what keeps drawing me that, like I hunt traditional funnels. I've hunted creek crossing, ditch crossing. So, yeah, a lot of times I'm hunting these spots, and I've come to realize they're just either something's too flat, too open, you know. And it's like I'd see a mature buck, but he would, instead of coming through the funnel, he's skirting it up on that ridge line. Well, I look at the ridge line, it's got a high stem count. So that makes sense why he's cruising there. So the last couple of years, I've been like last year or two, like even my postseason from this past postseason, man, I dove into bedding areas. I mean, I got dirty, got into cuts of mountain laurel, you name it, I got into. And I started understanding the structure of the bedding areas. You know, where the does were bedding, the immature bucks were bedding, and the mature bucks were bedding. Now, we all know a doe lay in a mature buck's bed, but that's where a buck's going to lay. I understand where the does are. What I do is I understand that social structure, that bedding area, because I hunt a lot of cuts, and they can be pretty big sometimes. So I get in these areas. You know, I'll find the textbook buck beds right off the point, stuff like that. The does a little bit back a little further. You know, immature bucks back a little further. Occasionally, yes, I'll find immature bucks back in a little bit too. But what I do is once I understand I get in there, I'll work off of that, and I find that weak spot where I can kill them early. Mid-October, late October, possibly coming out to feed, or maybe late October, he's hitting that scrape. He's, you know, starting to get a little amped up. A lot of situations, there's a lot of diversity by habitat or some terrain, subtle terrain features in there, which in a rut situation, he's going to bring him by me. When he's in them bedding areas bumping doe, he's cruising them edges of them bedding area, because a lot of my sets are just on the outside of that thick stuff, where I can pretty much shoot into it almost, or I'm just getting in the interior of these bedding areas. I'm getting really aggressive. Am I going to bump deer? Yeah. But an all-day rut hunt, 9, 10 o'clock, he comes cruising by. He doesn't know I'm in there. I'm going to kill him. That's kind of my mindset now. I told guys, we've had a lot of seasonally warm ruts over the years. It seems like it never fails. The rut comes in, we get warm weather. Mm-hmm. That slows the rut action down. And where I was really good hunting funnels and stuff like that, like I'm not being as successful. Like, I'm pounding out 5, 6, 7, 8 days, and it's like, man, there has to be a better way. So now I'm just getting kind of more aggressive and pushing these bedding areas, because even on your warmer days, maybe they're not moving much, but I'm going to be in and near where they're laying down their bellies. They're going to get up. They're still going to look for does, still stuff. Maybe they're just not coming out of that core a little further. That's kind of my mindset going into this rut, where I'm going to be more aggressive and push the cover in the bedding areas. You know, I'm finding that subtle weak spot on the outside leading in, or just the inside of these areas that are really thick and holding the deer, if that makes sense to you guys.
Nope, absolutely. Now, when you're talking about pushing in close to these bedding areas,
yeah,
and a bedding area, depending upon the type of terrain you're hunting, yes, can look massively different. It could be a terrain-driven bedding area. It could be thick cover, high mm-hmm. stem count area, whatever it may be. But regardless, you identify this specific region as the bedding area, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of deer that are laying down in this area, whether it's does, bucks, whatever. There's a lot of deer laying down in this area. You got a ton of bucks on your wall behind here that I'm looking at you behind your head here. I'm assuming you have a tactic in mind that you like to utilize during the rut frequently in and around these bedding areas. Do you like to set up downwind? I know that's a very popular kind of cliche tactic. Is that something that you implement a lot, or how do you, like, what is Ryan Glitzky's favorite tactic to implement during the rut that you are extremely confident in?
I'll take a step back. If you're going to tell me we're going to have seasonally cool weather, like we're going to have perfect rut conditions, I liked if I can find a funnel in between multiple bedding areas, you know, where he's going to cruise to a bedding area, cruise to another bedding area, you know, an area where it's either ditch crossing, head of a draw, a creek crossing, a habitat diversity, something there that he's going to come through and I can kill him in between bedding areas. I think they're going to be out cruising hard for a couple of days. I will transition to the spot like out more of a traditional rut spot. You know what I mean? I will transition hunt areas, but like I said, I think majority of my time what I'm doing is I may, instead of trying to put myself between multiple bedding areas at a time, I may force to just one. And when I do that, yes, I'm playing the wind and thermals. Because I told you, I've gone into these bedding areas and I understand where they're bedding. So when I go to set up, and I may have 2, 3, 4 sets in around that bedding area. So my access and my exits, of course, it's important. I will get aggressive days and just, I'm going in. Everything's lined up. I need to go in. When it comes to the hunting situation, it just depends. I'm playing wind and thermals as much as my vans. But anybody's hunting the mountains, it likes to do its own thing at times. You know, yeah, they're calling for southwest, 60% south, southwest, and then it's 20% there, 20% there. So you got to play the odds a little bit. You know, my setups are basically what I'm looking for. A lot of my setups is you can't find them on a map, if that makes sense. You're not finding these subtle ditch crossings or terrain features. What I like to do is, we'll take a clear cut, for example. A lot of times I'll leave maybe a couple bigger trees in around that bedding areas. And a lot of times I'll get in these areas, old log roads, and say there'll be a lone tree or two, but that diversity kind of opens up, the habitat opens up a little bit in there. And there's a couple of multiple edges of that cut right there, grown up at different ages maybe. And there'll be 4, 5, 6 trails right there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'll set up on something like that. Or maybe I just come on the downwind edge of that, and maybe there's a slight point running up in that bedding area. And also maybe there's maybe a little ditch or something there. Like, it's all situational. I'm just trying to find that weak spot where I think I could kill him, get in and out fairly clean, and sit there for 2, 3, 4 days that I need to, all day sits, to get an opportunity. You know, like I said, I have 100 things going through my head now because I have so many bedding areas I've pinned and I've blown up, and I have multiple sets, but each one's different, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like a look at one thing, you know, and like a lot of guys get caught up in sign. I want to see hot sign. Like when I'm in season scouting, and that's something I've done with mistake in the past, is I love post-season scouting. I think I'd rather post-season scout than hunt, to be honest with you. I love it. But I kind of realized when I was really, really like farm country, hill country, when my post-season scouting usually put me in the right situation. Well, the mountains with the acorn crops, the clear cuts coming up, you know, sometimes there's a little shift in the bedding and different things happen. I lost my damn train of thought. I was going down a rabbit hole and I ended up forgetting where the hell I was going there. What the hell was I talking about? Sorry, guys.
You were talking about postseason scouting.
There we go. Sorry. But like now I've learned, utilize more of my in-season scouting though. You know, I loved all day grind, but hey, maybe I only hunt till 10 or 11, get down and scout because I'm not seeing what I want to see. I want to find hot sign. But is that necessarily where I have to sit to kill them? You know what I mean? I may have to work off that a little bit and find that subtle terrain feature, that edge or that break where I feel he's going to cruise by to get an opportunity.
Let me ask you this, because it sounds like you're a guy that likes to hunt in and around bedding areas pretty often. So you'd mentioned that you're not really a bedding area hunter. Like you're not getting inside the bedding and climbing a tree.
Hunting over buck bed. That's not me. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're a guy that likes to hunt on the fringe of bedding,
during the rut and catch bucks doing what bucks do during the rut.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm very similar. That's probably my favorite way to hunt deer.
Yeah.
So I got some questions for you. When you're scouting, let's say in season scouting, right? Mm-hmm. So like this is not post, obviously post season scouting, we're going to get in the bedding. We're going to blow it up. We're going to soak up as much information as possible. But in season scouting, we may not want to take that approach because, you know, obviously we don't want to go in there and booger the whole area up. And then we're not going to have any confidence sitting it because we just walked all through it and bumped deer all over the place. Mm-hmm. So what are you looking for as far as habitat is concerned? And we can talk about different types of habitat, like as far as hill country versus farm country, et cetera. But so I guess we'll start with hill country and then we'll go into farm country. What are you looking for in terms of habitat to identify like, okay, this is a bedding area. And what are you looking for in terms of sign to pair with that enough to say, okay, this is where I need to set up. I can kill him here. If there's one in here, I can kill him here.
Yeah. I mean, it really, it goes across the whole board. A high stem count is important to me. That diversity, like briars, high stem count. Like I said, I get in some mountain lore also too. But I like a high stem count. A lot of green briars, nasty shit. You don't want to go through it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's the stuff. It don't matter if it's farm country. It could be like a thick river bottom. If I'm down in flood bottoms hunting a river bottom, or even getting hill country, get them briars covered on ridge point or something like that where they're bedded off of. But it always seems to be what I always find. When I find my best spots, the key word is diversity for me. It's that habitat diversity or terrain diversity. Perfect world. You got both coming together. That's what I'm looking for. When it comes to sign, you know, once I'm in around those areas, I feel they're bedding or I feel a mature buck's going to be bedding. You know, we're looking for the same thing, hot, you know, fresh rubs, hot scrape and tracks. That's something I've really started to focus on the last 2 years because, yeah, they can hide from the cell cams and cameras and stuff. Yeah, they can't hide their tracks, you know, so that's something I've really been starting to key on. You get up on a hot scrape and you see a big track on it. You know, we don't know what the horns are on top of the head, but I'm going to take a chance. That's a mature buck, you know? Mm-hmm. So those are the little things there I'm looking for. And then it's just, it's kind of like I tell guys, I get to ask this a lot, like, well, how far do you push? Well, I don't know until you blow it up a few times to start figuring that out, you know, because there is times, you know, I've got some good friends that are fantastic hunters, 10 times better than me. You know, those guys will go in, they'll bump them out of there. They want to mm-hmm. see him because he's, what I've seen this too is, yeah, they'll get on a doe and cruise 2 miles, 3 miles. You know, they do it. But a lot of times they have their core. Now, that core could be a few hundred acres, but they don't want to leave that core area a lot of times. And if they got the does there, they're going to be in there. So if you bump them, it worked for him. You know, you may have to adjust. I mean, you could do the whole bump and dump, or you just work off that to find maybe that subtle terrain feature, terrain or habitat diversity or something where you could set up and maybe catch him in the next couple of days coming or going through there.
Yeah, for sure. In the rut, in the rut as well, everything's just, you know, like if there's deer in there, whether it be a small buck, you know.
Yeah, and that's something I've learned over the years. Like I hear a lot about hunting the downwind edge of doe bedding areas or bedding areas. Fantastic tactic. I've killed a lot of whitetails that way. But I can guarantee you, both you guys here, we've all been near a bedding area, not in it, maybe just off it. And what do you hear inside there during the rut? You hear all that chasing. You hear him running. You hear him grunting. And I'm sitting out here listening to it. And it's like, that's where I started to focus. Like, you know what? Let's get a little more aggressive. Let's start pushing a little bit more towards that. Maybe not in the interior, but I'm going to get aggressive and go into it a little bit. See what I can find in that interior somewhere just off that interior where now I'm in the bedding area, but I can get in and out here. And I have, you know, because like I said, I've already broke these areas down where I can get a little more aggressive and push into that bedding area, into a clear cut or whatever it is, briar patch, whatever it is. I can get in a little bit and find that soft spot now just getting into the bedding area where instead of hearing them, I'm going to kill them, if that makes sense.
Yep, 100%,
yep.
Man.
Yep.
Yeah, I had a hunt last year that was like probably my turning point in that exact scenario that you just described, where I've been a guy that's like hunted on the fringe for the last 3-4 years or so. And then last year I was on a permission farm that I obtained in upstate New York to farm country, hill country. And I identified this bedding area, boots on the ground, scouted it and just blew it up completely, but just didn't care. There was so much sign in there that I was like, I can still throw a sit at this. These deer, they're still, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they're not just going to leave this area.
Yeah,
and I threw a sit at it.
It's hard to bump them. I really believe, unless you're every day they're getting hounded. They've got some age on them. Once you get 3 years old, around my area, they've gone through a couple gun seasons in Pennsylvania, something like that. They start to catch on pretty quick where safe, and they know not to leave those areas.
And so, long story short, I got slammed in the middle of this thing, climbed the tiniest little tree, and because there wasn't much for trees in this bedding area. It was basically just an old cow pasture that grew up in Goldenrod with an apple orchard that grew up the side of it. And I climbed this little apple tree and had the most fun hunt of my life. Just sitting in there.
Yep.
Just absolutely. I ended up getting busted by a really good mid 140s deer.
Oh, man.
I rattled him in and he came in perfect, read the script. I identified he's probably bedding up there. And he came right down to 10 yards and I was turned around looking at a different buck that was tending does. And I heard him stomp and I turned around and he's 9 yards staring through my soul.
Oh man.
Got me.
Hey, that aggressive mindset, I tell guys, I've been around some really good whitetail hunters being part of Lone Wolf and stuff. And what's really in common with a lot of guys, that aggressive mindset, you're going to blow up a lot of hunts. You're going to bust a lot of deer, but you're going to get more opportunities in my opinion.
So let me ask you this. If you're scouting an area, in-season scouting, once again, and we identify that bedding area like we were just talking about in the previous scenario. So let's say we find what we think looks like ideal habitat for deer bedding. And we're like, okay, we don't want to go in there and blow it up, but we'll look around a little bit on the fringes. And then we've come across fresh scrape, another fresh scrape, two fresh rubs. Three trails coming out, beaten down trails, probably from doe groups or whatever, with intersecting trails. We find all the things, right? Yeah. There's fresh droppings. It just looks phenomenal. Okay, this is it. This is it right here. Big track in the scrape. All right. All the signs are leading to hunt this area.
Yep.
And we got a good wind. Our access is good. Everything lines up. How many sits are you going to throw at that location before you say, this isn't where it's going to happen?
Till I kill them, I've sat many days in one tree just because my confidence is so high. If I'm continuing to see deer, and like I said, once you start, I think, pushing cover and stuff like that, you're not going to see a lot of deer. But if I feel that I'm not getting busted, occasionally a doe's going to bust you, that's hunting. It's going to happen. You know what I mean? If I feel that I'm fairly clean getting out my access, I'm seeing some deer here and there, and I don't feel like I'm blowing that area up. I like to lease hunt a minimum of 3 days in a spot, in the rut. Because I think that's where a lot of guys handicap themselves is mobile hunting is fantastic. And you can run and gun every day and kill a good buck every year. Absolutely. But I see a lot of guys struggle. And I think especially in the Big Woods Mountains where them bucks are roaming. Like I said, they have their core, but that core is four times the size of something in farm country. So sometimes you got to let things play out. So I'm going to at least give that probably 3-4 days if conditions are right. And I feel I'm not. Now, if I'm getting blown out every day, a mature buck or something, a buck maybe I'm after or something, he busts me, I've got to relocate probably a little bit. Maybe I won't really relocate far, but I'm going to be, I still want to hunt to that core area, but I'm going to have to relocate a little bit. And a lot of times what's great about being mobile, I get in a tree, I see something. You know how it is. It looks good on the ground, but once we get in that tree for a day or two,
100%.
Day and a half, I need to make an adjustment. I'm seeing something, maybe seeing a mature buck or something, and you need to make that move. It's hard to get me out of a tree once I'm in it for the day. I tell guys, unless I see a hot doe out there 60, 70 yards and there's a buck behind her, I know she's hot. I'm usually going to transition. I'm getting down and going over near where she ran through because 2 hours later, a good buck might come through on that trail. I've killed deer like that, Right. So, but in general, if I go in one day and I'm just not feeling it and the area is cold, maybe I just went off my postseason. I did this last season. I went to ridge system. It looked absolutely fantastic in the postseason. There was old scrapes, rubs, everything. I'm thinking, I'm coming on this ridge. I'm killing a buck. I went in this year blind, went in there off my postseason scouting. As soon as I got in a tree, man, I knew it was cold. There was a scrape bear, leaves over it. All the acorns were all eaten up there. And there was a lot of acorns on the ground up here last year. And I'm thinking all the food was sucked up already. The deer shifted out of here, probably the doe shifted out of here along with the bucks. I sat there and I was like, nope, I can feel it. And I'm out of there. I just won't waste sits like that. Now, if my confidence is there, I don't care. I'll sit there a week damn straight if I feel that good. You know, I'm kind of, everybody knows Bobby Worthington. That's kind of where I got my, kind of my base with rut hunting, learn from him and stuff. I got reading his books. You know, you listen to him, he'll hunt a tree day in and day out. You know, he just gets in there and hunts. And that was what my mindset a lot of times too. I've kind of taken a little step back to where, you know, maybe at 3-4 days, then I'm going to get down and try maybe reposition, re-scout for something a little, you know, I'm off somewhere. But like I said, I have no problem grinding out one spot if I feel confident.
Right on.
Cool.
Mike, you got anything for that?
Yeah. So we kind of hunt a lot of the same terrain. Being from Pennsylvania, I hunt very mountainous terrain. And what would you say? I know you spoke about, you know, cutovers or clear cuts and bedding areas and thick stem counts and stuff like that. But to find one of these bedding areas, what would you say a picture perfect ideal terrain feature you would find one of those bedding areas in? Like if you're looking at a topo map, what are you looking for?
If I get them on the leeward side, if they're on the leeward side, what I notice, if I get them that cuts more on that leeward side of that ridge system, I can pretty much all those little points, all those little micro points, I can work off that upper one third a lot of times, just where that military crest. A lot of times I'm gonna pick up mature buck beds. You know, I can usually count on picking up beds in general. As I work back off at, that's when you find your immature, your does, stuff like that. That's kind of textbooks a lot of times I see that. Even if it's on a northern end or whatever, I still find a lot of textbook stuff, but sometimes maybe I find them a little bit back, a little deeper in the bedding. But me, when I see them cuts on that leeward side for me, I want to say it's simpler for me to break down, but I have an easier time getting in there and figuring it out for me because it seems to be a little more textbook. I mean, like I said, I've seen them bedding on the windward side for no dumb reason. Like you read all this stuff, leeward, upper third. You know, they don't bed in the bottoms. Trust me, I've seen 100 things. I've seen them dumb things. Right. Freaking, you know, a darn deer bed anywhere.
Sometimes you see a deer bed in a wide open woods.
Yeah, and I think what it is, I tell guys, there's not, you know, always and never does not exist in whitetails, any of this. You know, we're always we're always students of the game. We're never going to match this. So you just got to play the odds, if that makes sense. That's what I'm trying to do a lot of times. A lot of this is, where is my odds at? You know, yes, there's always that outlier. He's going to do something you didn't expect, especially mature buck. He's going to do something different. But where are my best odds for a situation? You know, either looking for a bedding area, setting up on a funnel, whatever it is. I'm looking for my odds.
Gotcha. Yeah, I
want to touch on something that you – sorry, Mike, go ahead.
No, I was just saying I can definitely relate to that. And I have another question, I guess. Do you hunt a lot of public land here in Pennsylvania, or do you hunt mostly private or a mix of both?
Most of it, like I'll hunt a little bit private early season because it's my work situation. I drive like 45 minutes to work. For me, get the mountains in the evenings, it'd be dark. You know, so I have a private farm. Forget how many, 150, whatever, give or take, 200. I don't even know what the hell it is. I hunt that occasionally in the evenings, kill a couple doe or something like that. Take my son, my dad, my buddy goes out there. Kind of just friends, you know, family. I just kind of lay back early. But then once the rut kicks in, like when I'm on vacation, I'm public. You know, I'm pretty much – occasionally I'll go to the farm a little bit, maybe gun season or something. But pretty much when I'm off, every day I'm in the mountains hunting public.
Yeah, you guys, you probably have a lot of – and you've been hunting there for, I'm sure, the same body of public for quite a long time. So you got a lot of, you know, historical data in your head and in your arsenal that you use every year. Which definitely I'm coming to find out helps a lot more in the big mountainous terrain. My family just picked up a cabin in the mountains, Appalachian Mountains here in South Central Pennsylvania. And over the past 5 years or so, I've been putting a lot more, you know, setups in the mountains. And I you know, I did really well the first 2 years. The second year I killed a nice buck up there. And then I just noticed that really what it comes down to is not only just finding new sign, like there's always going to be that really hot sign, especially during the rut, but like historical data is huge in those little cuts and spots that you can find up there. If one's using it 1 year, you can almost guarantee the next year around the same time, another one's going to be using it. So,
A lot of that's folks, a lot of times I tell guys a deadly tactic. You either can do it with trail cameras or ass time in a tree is you start figuring out when them does are starting to pop around a certain time frame in a particular bedding area. That's deadly. You know, and, you know, I've done that in the past with cameras. I've done it with just sitting in an area and like, you notice it heats up last couple of days of October, November, or it heats up November 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. You know, you'll kind of learn that. Now, there's areas that are just good. Then there's areas that are just certain times, certain days or certain weeks, or, you know, that's hard to keep track sometimes. But if you start getting that catalog of that, man, you can really put yourself in some great situations throughout the season.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ryan, I want to circle back real quick. You talked about being in a tree, seeing a hot doe get chased off 70, 80 yards off in front of you. Let's say you're set up over this trail intersection here, but she gets chased up the ridge from you or down, whatever, over there, 70 yards away from you. And then you'll make a move and you've had historic success on utilizing that tactic. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more? Because I found that pretty interesting.
I know one of the bucks back here, I can tell you the situation that day. It was I'm old and I forget stuff, but it was like 9:30 mid morning or something like that. And I heard what we love hearing. You hear the twig snap, you hear the grunting, you hear it coming. And I had a doe fly by me and a couple younger bucks. I think it was a couple year old, 2 year old, something like that, come flying underneath me. And this was like 9:30 in the morning. I remember it was the next to last day of bow season. And I'm sitting there and I'm already figuring out where my gun stand's going to be for rifle season, you know, because it's like, you know, fat lady singing, you know. And I don't remember, forget, I looked up and a buck was cruising that ridge. He hit that doe's trail from mid-morning and he come right to me and I killed him. And it was just, you know, and that's why I remember looking at that and seeing that. And I've seen it in the past where I've seen a good doe go, you know, out there in the timber, 70, 80 yards or whatever. You know, he said, that's pretty cool, man. That's what I'm here for. And then an hour later, there goes a big mature buck on that trail sniffing.
Golly. Like, you're like, man, if I'd have just moved up there.
You know, it's like, shit, I should have moved. Because it's hard sometimes. You're like, are they going to come back? You know, because you always have that too. You know, it's like, are they going to come back? Yeah. What are we going to do? A lot of times it's kind of that, you know, like that gut feeling's like, I need to move. You know, something's telling me I need to move over there. I'm going to move and get closer within bow range. Sometimes I'm like, man, I don't really feel like moving. I may gamble and like maybe they'll come back, but usually that burns me when I decide that decision, you know. So I've learned that something will get me out of tree. I see a hot doe and I know she's getting trailed by bucks. You know she's in heat, she's getting chased. Usually I'm gonna adjust my setup real quick.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. I want to talk in the tree a little bit. Do you do a lot of calling?
I
tell myself I'm like the silent assassin, man. I will call. I always have a grunt tube on me. Absolutely. I will utilize in certain situations. I'm just not a big caller. You know, I deal with a lot of pressure. I've called them in. I've killed them that way. But me, I'm more the type, I just like to sit there and be quiet. That's just my style. I don't call very often. If I see a situation, a buck's out there, 60, 70, 80 yards, I may give him a few grunts. Maybe I throw a snort wheeze at him, you know, but typically for me, a lot of younger bucks I call in. Now, some guys do great on it, you know, and have a lot of confidence. Me, I just been very successful just sitting there, putting my time in and killing. That's just me personally. That's all.
Yeah. Right. Nothing wrong with that, man. I was, I was on a piece of public about 7 days ago, about a week ago or so. And there was a guy, I guess he had come in after me because there's only one access into this spot that I was hunting, unless he came slammed through the middle of a clear cut, which I doubt he did that.
Yeah.
So there's only one access to come into this spot. And he, I guess, came in after me. And I thought I set up pretty late. I didn't get in there until 3:30 or so. It was like October 6th, 7th, something along those lines. And a guy set up. I mean, literally 70 yards from me.
Yeah.
Not very far at all. And on a piece of public up here. And at about 5:30, he started rattling with a rattle bag and blowing on a grunt tube.
Yeah. I mean, just, bah, bah, we've all been there. Bah,
bah, just wearing this thing out, man, and slamming this rattle bag together. And number one, on October 6th, that's just, that's crazy, in my opinion.
But, yeah.
And, number two, it sounded so bad. Like, I'm not judging the guy. I was using it as a learning tool. Like, I was like, man, I hate those rattle bags. I just think they sound just awful.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe some listener that's listening to this right now has killed a giant with a rattle bag.
Yeah. Now, you put me in whatever. Iowa. Now, if I'm in Iowa hunting, I'm rattling. I'm calling. You know, that every 20 minutes half hour, because I've killed 2 out of the 3 bucks I killed in Iowa, I rattle them in. You know, it's like different out there. I'm playing the game out there. Now, like I said, I'm being more aggressive this year, getting more in the really tight cover. So you may see me, like, I may personally call a little bit more this year. You know, a few grunts out, stuff like that. Like, being that I'm being really aggressive, you know, I may do that this year a little more than normal. Because sometimes I do just out of damn boredom. Yeah, I think sometimes I'm able to grunt 12 hours a day. 100%. I just throw a grunt out, you know. And but I think I may this year. I thought about it because I know some guys are really successful. Every half hour they call and they're really successful. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe this year I will add a little bit more to my arsenal, throw a little more grunts out there, hear and see something, maybe throw a snort wheeze out or something like that possibly. You're not going to see me carrying rattle antlers, though. Yeah, I carry enough shit. I will carry a grunt call and utilize it. You know, like I said, you put me in Iowa, I'm taking my set of rattle horns with me. That's a different world out there.
Yeah, I carried rattle and antlers when I went and hunted New York this year because it's a very highly rated county that I hunted, and it's a very under-pressured farm that I hunted. And I rattled in so many bucks, and I had so much fun. That's the key word. I think
it works great even on heavy pressured areas. It can work. But as you get rid of that pressure, it becomes more effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you because you don't have a bunch of guys on October 6th slamming rattle bags together.
During the rut, do you find yourself doing more all-day sits, or do you tend to try to do maybe a morning, get some slip out, get some lunch, and then go in for the evening type of hunt if the morning isn't? I know you said you will sit the same tree 3 days in a row. Yeah. Does that mean you don't really do it with mobile setups? You kind of have your set stands that you rely on every year?
I'm strictly mobile. I run Lone Wolf. So I'm strictly mobile. I'm typically – like I will – like I said, if I'm hunting a spot 3-4 days in a row, I will leave my set up there and just take my bottom sticks off. You know what I mean? I'll do that. But a lot of times I'm pulling and going, you know, every couple of days or every day if I'm not feeling it or something like that. I prefer to hunt all day. My best action is typically that mid-morning on – the early afternoon. That's probably been some of my best time frames.
Dude, midday, when I see
the big, middays is the big boys, man. I mean, that midday, man, I've seen so many big bucks. Even when it's warm, like you're sitting there, it's 70 degrees, like you're in a t-shirt, and like you're just not paying attention. And here comes this cruiser, you know, 130, 40 inch deer comes up over the ridge, tongue hanging out, and you're like, it's 70 damn degrees, you know? And I've seen it enough. Even when it's warm, it sucks. I sit there all day. Now, this year, I probably will do a little, like I said, I've kind of slacked on my in-season scout a little bit because I favor my post-season scout so much. And that's kind of burned me in the mountains a little bit where, okay, when I'm in it, I'm going to grind. If I'm not finding it, I'm going to tear down it, you know, say 10 o'clock. I'm going to go scout for 2-3 hours, find that afternoon spot, hang that set, hunt it the evening, and hunt the next morning. If I don't see what I like, I'm going to keep repeating that process. Now, when I get into it and I feel good about the area, that's when I'm going to hammer 2, 3, 4, 5 days, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of like years past, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to grind here for a couple of days. Well, I got this spot I found in the postseason. I'm going to go over there, grind for a couple of days. And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of lukewarm, the spot. But like, yeah, they come through. I've learned that you need to get in. You need to find them. You know, if you're not in, you got to go find them.
Right. Now, when you say find them, you mean any deer. Like if it's, let's say it's November 2nd and you walk in, you're hunting a new spot that you just found or something. You found a bunch of good rut sign in there, but when you sat in it for, let's say at least a whole day and then the next half of the day and you get down, you might've seen a couple of does. Are you going to stick it out in a spot like that? Or are you going to look somewhere else? Even though you saw deer and, you know, are you still going to stick it out?
I think it comes down to it's just that gut feeling, to be honest with you, because every situation is different. If something's telling me, like I said, I'm still running cameras. I just get due for inventory. I let them soak through the fall historical data. Say if I don't run cameras next year, so I ain't got to know a damn thing what's in the area, you know, other than by woodsmanship, just cutting tracks, big rubs or whatever it is, or visually seeing them. You know, it just depends what I see and what I feel for the area. If I feel that area is cold, I'm going to get down and move. It just comes down to a gut feeling for me, to be honest with you. You know, if I see a shooter or I see a couple bucks cruising, see a few does. And like I said, I'm in some tight cover, so I don't expect to see a lot of deer. Maybe it's a lot more. I'm hearing action too. Also, I'm hearing grunts. I'm hearing twig snap. I'm seeing it. I'm hearing it. Maybe I'm not seeing it. Occasionally I get a glimpse of deer. One walks by. That all plays into my you know, how I feel if I'm going to adjust my setup and move somewhere or just do a micro adjustment in there if I need to get on the deer that I'm hearing. You know, like I said, it's so situational. And I think the longer you do it, you got to learn to trust that gut. You know, you do it so long, you kind of know, like, yeah, this is cold. Something's not, I'm not getting the, you know, I'm not feeling it here. Cause we all know we're in the spot. You feel it. When you're in something, you're like, man, it's going to happen here. Maybe not today, but day three, four, it's going to happen. That's an area I want to stick with. You know, if my confidence isn't there, that maybe that's where I tear it down mid morning or I give it an all day sit, maybe the mid morning next day. Okay. I'm going to relocate here now.
Let me ask you a selfish question real quick, Ryan. Yeah. I'd mentioned the, 500 acre private farm I gained permission to up in upstate New York. And I'm headed there for a 7 day trip in about 3 weeks. So I'll be there November 7th. Yeah. 7th through the 13th is when I'll be there. And, last year was my first time hunting there. It was the most fun deer hunting trip I've ever taken in my life. I hunt primarily in the Southeast. It's not the most action packed deer hunting in the country, you know? And, to go up there to the Northeast and have the time that I had up there was epic. But, anyway, I hunted a little bit of every type of way that you could hunt it. I hunted in a long range funnel, what I would consider a long range funnel in farm country, kind of like a tract of timber that travels through multiple properties and touches several different fields. And I just sat somewhere in the middle of it with good sign. I hunted in thick cover one day and I hunted near food one day and it didn't really, I saw deer. Everything that I did, the area is so dense with deer that I was just kind of covered in deer the entire trip, which is awesome. I'm not complaining by any stretch of the imagination. My question for you is, what is your go-to move in farm country during the rut? So are you going to sit like a long range funnel somewhere way back in the cover? Are you going to stick near the food? Cause obviously the food's huge in farm country, or does it look completely different?
It's going to depend on the situation. If I have a chance to postseason scout that spot, that's going to tell me a lot because I'm going to know where the bedding is. If I can find that pinch, that funnel in between bedding, that's what I'm going to focus on. Or say there's a primary food source, you know, there's a lot of group of does going to, you know, where they're bedding, there's a pinch in between them. That's where I'm going to sit. So it depends on the situation there. If I was brand new to that property, didn't really know it, because I've done this mistake in the past, I'm taking one day and I'm blowing it up. I'm figuring out, I want to get in there. I want to know what's going on. Then I can adjust from there. Everybody's heard Nathan Killen. I had fortunate time to hunt with Nathan Killen for a week in Southern Ohio a few years back. And I learned more in that week and I learned in 10 years. And, you know, he had scouted down there a little bit. He had a little knowledge area, but his tactic was, and this doesn't matter if it's farm country, hill country or mountains, but you know, he went in there midday and scouted. He hung that set in the afternoon. He hunted that afternoon. He went back to that same spot in the morning. If he wasn't feeling it, repeat the process. I think it was day four he killed. You know what I mean? It was like, because you do, I told, it was funny. You can talk to Nathan and he says it. The night he came into the room, I said, you're killing tomorrow. I could see it. You could see the confidence. You know what I mean? Yeah, he found what he was looking for finally. And he probably sat that spot, I'm pretty sure, for a couple of days because he had so much confidence. He ended up killing next morning. My light bulb went from dim to on. You know what I mean?
Where I understood,
it's okay to grind, you know, in certain, when you're in it. When you're not, or you're unfamiliar with an area, you got to sit and see and scout. You have to go find it. You got to figure it out and get in the right in the areas. You know, that's what you got to do. Deadly tactic. I tell a lot of guys that, like, if you're not real familiar, brand new piece, I mean, don't be afraid to take a day and scout. That's my one thing. Don't be afraid to take a day. Because me, I'd rather scout 2 or 3 days. And I've been guilty. Just, I want to hunt. Like, last trip to Iowa, I didn't kill one. I went to a new area, and I never stepped foot on that farm. So basically what I did is I just kind of tippy-toed around. I got in a spot, passed up some deer first couple of days. Before you know it, you're 4 or 5 days in a hunt. If I'd have took those first 2 days and just walked the farm, blew it up, I would have knew where the pinches were. I would have knew where all the funnels were. I've known everything. So those 2 or 3 days of scouting, well, the next 5 or 6, I'd have been in it. I would have known where it ended, and I probably would have been successful, you know?
Yep.
Let me ask you.
So I did exactly that, man. And, I hunted it the first year learned a ton. Mostly just hunted. I spent one full day scouting. When I got there, I purposely got there a day early because I looked at the forecast and it was like in the 80s and raining the day before I was supposed to get there. And I was like, I got to get there and scout. Mm-hmm. And so I got there and scouted and learned a ton, but I was trying to absorb 500 acres of terrain that I've never hunted. Yep. You know what I mean? So I ended up going back for a turkey hunt this past spring and I did a bunch of spring scouting and there was still a lot of ruts on that. It was very visible because they don't green up quite as early as we do in the Southeast, you know? And so there was still a lot of visible ruts on and I found a bedding area that I have a camera in right now. It's there's a overgrown cow pasture meets a north facing hillside. And then right in the slam middle of it, there's an oak flat where there's literally three oak trees. That's it.
Mm.
And those three oak trees right in the middle make it open enough that you can climb right there and you can shoot into the middle of it.
And, I tell you what, man, you tell me something in farm country that I would hunt every single day. Give me an overgrown pasture, man. I mean, that is money.
man.
And just that diversity of habitat. That diversity of habitat's like just a deer magnet, man. I mean, 100%. You're telling me. Pick one thing. So give me an overgrown pasture. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, just a scrubby looking shitty thing, man. I said, yep, they're going to kill.
Man, and the best part of it is I climbed up in this thing and I looked and I'm like, what's that down there? And I'm standing there and I'm like, I see a car drive by. And I'm like, that's the dadgum blacktop.
Yeah.
The blacktop is 110 yards below this thing.
Oh, man.
Your access, you can literally climb straight up face and you're 110 yards in your tree. Right,
yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah, that sounds like we're gonna kill one.
Yeah, it's a cool spot, man.
That's awesome,
Mike. What you got?
Nothing. I was completely opposite of farm country. I was gonna ask another mountainous terrain.
Yeah, do your thing.
Because, I've been everywhere.
So I recently have kind of had this issue with during the rut is going into areas, mountainous terrain areas, especially on like pressured public ground in the mountains. And finding a ton of rut sign. I mean, scrapes and rubs and, you know, just a ton of rut sign, like fresh, you know, scrapes and all that on the outside of bedding areas. And then I'll be like, okay, you know, I've got my scouting in here. This looks great. And then I go to a completely different area, see the same thing. And it's just like you get so much vast sign, like just sign everywhere, all over the place, no matter where you're kind of where you kind of walk in. How do you or how would you kind of pinpoint exactly where you would want to be with all this amount of signs? It's the same thing kind of with acorns, you know. I know you've been in the mountains of Pennsylvania during whenever everyone's like, oh, hunt acorns. Well, it's like, well, if I hunted acorns, I can literally not find it. You know what I mean? It's everywhere.
Marbles, so, like, how do I know?
How do you know if they're eating it during the, you know, the night or eating it in the morning or the, you know, they, I figure like they have different ridges that they want to be during certain times of the day. So it's hard to, it's basically, how do you pinpoint that daytime rut activity and kind of
tell
the difference between the nighttime.
That's why my focus is on thick, nasty cover or steep terrain. Like I want to be where they're going to be on their bellies a lot of time. Even during the rut, they're still going to be on their bellies.
Mm-hmm.
So where are they bedding? That's why I'm getting into the thick stuff or steep terrain is another awesome thing. And you put thick cover and steep terrain, I will put $100 on the table. There's probably going to be a good buck in there and some deer in there. So what I'm doing, that's why I said when I go into these areas, I go into where a steep ridge system, you know, thick, nasty, high stem count. It could be a clear cut, maybe some Mount Laurel, a greenbrier patch, whatever the cover is, blow downs from a storm where it's nasty. You know they're in there. That's where, like I said, I utilize my posting scouting. I get in that shit. I want to know where he's bedding. I want to pick that shit up off his bed. Okay, because that's a key. You pick a big shed up. I did it last year, a big 8-point. The shed's laying in the bed, and there's a historical sign all around it. Well, okay, I just pegged where you're sleeping probably a good portion of the time. You know, they shift, of course, and around them bedding areas, but, like, how big of a key of a puzzle, can you, you know, that puzzle piece can you get getting something like that? You start to understand that bedding structure. You get in these bedding areas, understand it, the social structure. Now, yes, a lone buck will bed out in a point of a ridge. That's a different situation, a different hunting style to kill them. But say in a bedding area in general, that's what I like, kind of like a big cut that's maybe 50, 100 acres or whatever it is. Okay, if I get in it, I start to work my way out of it where a lot of guys want to scout from the outside in. Well, in the postseason, I can scout from the inside out, if that makes sense. So as I come out of that thick cover, that transition, I'm looking for that soft spot. Where's that tree or a ground set up where there's a weak spot? Maybe there's a slight ditch crossing in there or something in there, a creek crossing. Maybe it's where there's a transition, maybe an older cut and a newer cut are coming together, and there's another transition of mature timber. You got edge. They're an edge animal. Like things like that I'll focus on as I come out. Where's that first possible location where I can be aggressive? You know, we always got to play to win in thermals and things shift and blow you up. But where can I get in these areas where I know there's a lot of does bedding in a particular area, where I know them bucks are going to come into this bedding area? Where's that soft spot coming in out of that stuff? That's how I do it. And that's, of course, where you're reading your sign, too. Does that sign line up with what I'm seeing for killing them? And getting back to Nathan Killen, another fantastic thing he taught me, too. We always focus on sign. And we want to scout, in-season scout. We want to find a sign, find the spot to kill them. Sometimes that spot where all that sign is not where you necessarily got to kill them. You know, there might be a hot bench on the side of a ridge system. It has 10 scrapes getting down it. But it's damn near impossible to get in there. You know what I mean? Blowing something up. We'll work that bench out to where there's a draw coming up, and he's got to force around the top edge of that ditch or that draw. Then I can kill him over there. Sometimes you got to work off that hot sign. Maybe it's 40 yards. Maybe it's 140 yards where you kill him transition or other bucks transition in and out of that area. It might not have any sign, but there's a funnel or something there or a terrain feature or habitat divert or something there that's going to force him where he's coming in and out of there where you can kill him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a solid point.
Yeah, that makes a good point, man. Ryan, all right, I'm going to have you wrap it up here with what do you think is the number one mistake that people make hunting the rut?
I would say that moving too much and not enough, that fine line in there where sometimes you got to give a spot time. You know what I mean? You may have to give it 2-3 days. You know, if you're in cold stuff, feels cold, okay, move. But if you're in it, give it 2-3 days all day sits if you can. You know, put your time in, because I think a lot of guys get going to rut too. Guys don't want to sit all day. I'm telling you, the best action for me, yeah, I've killed a lot of my bucks early in the morning and in the evening like everybody else does. But that midday, man, I've killed bucks, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, 10:30, 1 o'clock. If you're not hunting all day and you're missing that midday, man, you're missing a ton of freaking of action. And the other thing, getting back to the technology side, do not chase your cameras. Do not chase your cameras. All you need to know, he's in there. Quit worrying about the cameras. Go hunt. That's when you get down, either from your post-season scouting along with your in-season scouting, then get you in the right situation. He know he's in there. Now go in there, hunt him down, and kill him.
Man, Ryan, I was really hoping you were going to say, don't worry about hunting all day. I only kill deer at 8 a.m. and 6 p.m.
Yeah, I did not want to hear the, oh, I kill a lot of my deer, like, you know, 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock.
I don't know why, man, but I as much as they suck, for some dumb reason, I enjoy the all-day sits. They can, after 11, 12 days, go a couple weeks in a row. Yeah, it wears you out, but I do enjoy that part of it.
Yeah. Get numb to it too after the first couple
of hours.
I got a really bad habit. If I'm not seeing what I want to see come 11:30, and I'm like, all right, well, I got to find out where it's happening right now. And I've heard a lot of people do that, you know, like they basically find the action that day and then get as close to you can, and set up on it. But, I mean, it hasn't really worked for me like that. It's more or less like I just go off historical data.
Yeah, you got to learn to kind of mold it all together. There's a time to grind. There's a time you got to get down and find it. There's a balance there. You know, if you're constantly hunting cold spots, days in, you know, hunting the same tree for 2 weeks straight, there's situations that could work. If you know, you find, you know, we all have that spot that works great season, you know, historically wise. But you need to be able to be, you kind of got to be mobile. And then you got to know when to sit on your ass and just sit there for a little bit. It's a fine balance you got to learn. It comes down to experience and your gut feeling, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Right on. Well, Ryan, thank you so much, man, for taking the time to hop on here and talk hunting the rut with us, man. Awesome, I really appreciate it.
Good time, boys.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. This episode is going to air during the rut. It's probably going to come on air somewhere around November 1, November 2, somewhere around there is when I'll kick it off. But really appreciate you climbing on here and talking with me and Mike. Mike, you got anything else before we close up?
Yes, sir, man. I really appreciate it. Go ahead and plug your socials real quick for all the listeners.
If you want to follow me, Moose1720 on Instagram.
Cool.
Hey, while we're on that topic, tell me a little bit about Live for Rudd. I was reading that on your Instagram page. And I
yeah,
didn't go,
I, didn't. Last, a couple guys were like, they popped into my head one time, and scouting's a really big part, especially my postseason scouting. And then I ended up just starting this little side business, you know. Guys just basically take me to wherever they hunt, private, public, I don't care. And I just basically, I don't pick trees. I will not pick trees, especially on public. Private, I'll help a guy a little bit. Public, I will not pick trees. It's just that foundation of scouting. A lot of people struggle. Where do I start? Basically, man, you're going to get dirty. We're going to get in the bedding areas. I'm explaining what I look for, what I see, and how I work off of that stuff. That's basically what it is. It doesn't matter if it's private or public. Eventually, I might start wandering down more land management stuff down the road a little bit. Right now, it's mostly focused on scouting. Either, you know, I summer scout, postseason scouting, whatever it is in the winter. Guys just hook up with me and, you know, I travel. I've been to New York, everywhere, you know, and done this. So it's pretty cool.
I bet if somebody was paying enough money, you'd be picking a tree for me. You might even put the damn tree stand up for me.
I try to keep it to where I don't ever want to blow up public. You know what I mean? Like I go up to spots, you know, I never want to cross that line. So I tell them, I'm going to give you a solid foundation. When you walk away at the end of the day, you can do this on your own and start building your own woodsmanship.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. That's really cool, man. I like that. Well, right on, everybody. Thanks for your time. And we will holler at everybody next week. Hope y'all have a good week. Hope everybody's season's going well. Hope everybody's fired up as I am. Ryan, I hope you have a bang up season, man.
Thank you, guys. Good luck too.
You too.
Yes, sir.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence. Helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.